Hey everyone, welcome to Know Your Gear QA number 141, episode 141. And I hope you guys had a good week. We're going to start the show just with an acknowledgement. Some of you guys are already talking about it. Unfortunately, a lot of us just found out about Neil Peart, that he has passed away. Unfortunately, he was battling brain cancer, I guess, for the last 3 years. And we know that's always a, you know, it's a thing that affects a lot of us. What I will do is I will make sure when I index this at this point, I will make sure to put a link to Cancer Society or a link to any of his, I'll look for any of his family pages or anything if anyone's in his family or with Rush is trying to, you know, for those of us that just want to kind of help in any way, we can put that out and put some, maybe put some money towards, you know, against cancer, because it's a thing. Unfortunately, that almost everybody watching this has knows either dealt with or knows somebody who has dealt with it in someone regard. And he was a obviously not only a great drummer, but he was the drummer's drummer. He was the drummer that most of the non-drummers knew was a great drummer. That to me is the biggest claim to fame I think you can have in any industry, any artistic form, is that when people who don't even know what your artistic form is know that you're in regarded as one of the best. How impressive is that? That, like I said, someone who doesn't even know much about drummers knows Neil Peart is literally one of the greatest drummers ever, and he'll be missed. And so I thought we'd deal with that. On that note, I think we're going to start this show. A couple things to note. If you're new to this live broadcast and you want to know, I index the video right after it's live. So all of the things we talk about will be indexed down below in the comments section. You can go ahead and click right to any subject matter. Also, if you want to listen to this hour and 20 minute on average live podcast, you can listen to it as a podcast on iTunes or whatever your preferred source of podcast streaming is, where we upload it. And you can listen to it that way too, because it's us every week. Is a guitar community. I talk about or answer questions or talk about the subjects you guys want to talk about. It's a great way to find out what's going on in the community and what's going on out there. So there you go. On a secondary note, I had an issue with a super chat, a viewer, and the viewer was Steve, and Steve did a super chat. For some reason, it didn't come through. I didn't see it. And I want to make sure, a lot of times what I told you guys before, the super chats, they pin into a box where I can keep them and I can always find them if I do miss one. So always don't feel free if you did a super chat and I missed it. Please feel free to email me and let me know. I literally can't get to every email, but I always try to catch those and answer them. And in his case, what I did is he said, I have a question. He's got a 72 Epiphone ET270. It's his very first guitar he ever had. That he screwed around with within the 80s to try and make it a super Strat style, which he said didn't work. I want to restore it, but I am having difficulty finding vintage parts. Do you have any recommendations for me? And what I'm going to recommend is, and I didn't research the question this week because I didn't want to take his question and be any different than I would do for any questions where I get them live right now. What I'm doing right now is I'm pulling up the guitar and looking at one because I want to look at the components, and I'll share with you guys in a second as soon as I see what it is. And so you guys can see, let me go back to it. I'm going to share with you guys the screen share. Give me a second. Screen share. It's kind of cool. We can do this. It is, there you go. For some reason, let me try this again. Screen share. Oh, there it is. Okay, here you go. All right, this is the guitar. I found one right here, as you can see. And this is an oddball guitar. And to answer your question, Steve, here's a used one for $699. If it's sentimental to you, it's your first guitar, you feel connected to it, you want to restore it, what I would highly recommend is you will make yourself crazy trying to find these parts in the aftermarket. You'll be traveling stores, you'll be doing everything. What I highly recommend is try to find one. I found this one in a second. It's $700. Of course, that's a lot of money. But you may necessarily have to find that one. There might be others. Look at Guitar Center to see, but definitely just find one and cannibalize it. And then what might happen is take the parts you want. See, here's one I already found that, it's $395. So here you go. So this is my answer. I've done this before. I've restored guitars for customers. Let me go ahead and stop this screen share. And I'm back. And every time I have found that chasing the parts is a hard thing to do. And what I would do is definitely just buy a used version of your guitar and transfer what you want from that guitar to your guitar. That's going to be the fastest, easiest way to do it. I promise you, the investment won't make sense financially. This is definitely an emotional build. Okay. So in other words, there's no way that buying this is going to make sense. But what I will tell you is you'll just be finding like parts and doing twice the work anyways. So that's my recommendation. Although, like I said, what's nice about having a community of guitar players is some of you guys can put in, type in some recommendations as well. So if you have stuff for Steve, throw it in there. If you've experienced the same guitar or things like it, go ahead. So, let's see. What else do we got? Mitchell did a super chat for no reason. It just says super chat. So, all right. Thank you for that, Mitchell. Okay. And then hold on. Here's another super chat. Let me highlight it. Oh, it's Mitchell again. Okay. Here we go, Mitchell. He said he bought a Halo based on your review of them. Can't wait. Ah, I'm really excited. Mitchell, let me know. I'm really excited. There has been an interesting thing. 'Cause like I said, I was playing that guitar today. In fact, I decided, because NAMM shows next week, I had lunch today with Lawrence Petros. We went to and had a sandwich and hung out for a little while, played a little guitar, talked a little pedals and amps. We were checking out my Dirty Shirley together. And I was showing him guitars, and I pulled that guitar out. And man, did it just sound so good. It did. I'm almost afraid of that guitar being the guitar you're going to see in almost all the reviews that don't involve me reviewing guitars from now on. I'm really, really excited about that instrument. And of course, you know, I'm a gear channel, and part of the issue, having a gear channel is you get to check out a lot of gear. Part of the problem with having a gear channel is it's hard to stick to a piece of gear because there's always another piece of gear to show you guys or talk about. And so, but there are very few times, and this is one of them with the Halo guitar, where I had so much involved in what I did with it that it just really feels right every time I play it. It's a really good guitar. So there you go. And then I have some super chats pending. Let me not answer them real quick, guys, because I want to answer a non-super chat. Remember, guys, if you guys want a question, just start with the question marks first. Like this question right here. It says, Phil, any super strat upgrade parts that are a must-have? You know, super strat upgrade parts that are must have. Well, I'm assuming let's take a scenario that I can actually work with. Let's say you want a super strat out of Mexican Standard Stratocaster or a Player Strat. The first thing I would do to make a super strat is upgrade that bridge. A super strat to me is a strat that has the high performance bridge. So in other words, using like a Godot bridge or a Vega trim bridge, which was a fantastic bridge. Babbitts. I never say the right Babbitts. It's, I can say it right when I read it, but when I can't remember. I think it's a C at the end, right? But, upgrade that bridge. Super Strat, of course, always has higher output pickups, or at least a lot of us assume it has, you know, high end pickups. So upgrade those pickups and then upgrade the tuning keys and then make sure it has a nice nut, either made of bone or Graftec. That's what I would think of as a super strat. Now, some players are going to think of super strats as being Floyd Rose strats, especially like Charvel super strat stuff. To me, a super strat, like a Sur, is a super strat. You know, a super strat is anytime you take a standard Stratocaster form and you make it play really nice and sound, you know, more high end, or you try to put more high output pickups. So those are some suggestions I have. Steve Long did a super chat, just said, thanks. Thank you, Steve. I appreciate that. Hold on one second. What's weird about the super chats is it's like on my screen, if I don't answer them in time, they go away, but they're in my, my archive. So I'm going to pull one from the archive while you look at Steve's super chat. Let's see. Jididgy says, any tips for putting a 3-bolt tele neck? Oh, for putting it on. I think it's pretty straightforward, but any pro tips? Neck from Warmoth guitar is a 72 issue. No, there's no real issues there. When I put on a neck, period, there's always a way I like to do it. First, I install the neck onto the guitar. Now, there's a couple ways. And the reason why I try to do this is I'm going to tell you the ways I know and the ways I prefer. The ways I know is you can install the neck, tighten the screws, put the strings on. I tighten up the strings, tune it up. Then I check the bolts and tighten them again, make sure they're fine. And then I set the action and intonation, all that stuff. And then I find out then if you know it needs a shim. Now I'm assuming if it's a 3-bolt, it has a micro tilt. But a lot of luthiers and repair guys like to take and put on the neck, not tighten the screws all the way. So you just leave them just taut, but not tight, super tight, right? So that you can actually feel the neck, not move, but you get the idea. Just give it just a little teeny bit. We're talking about the little miss. Put the strings on and tighten the strings up the tune. And then while the strings are pulling down, that pulling the neck against the body, then they tighten the neck. And they think that put that more down pressure plus, you know, down pressure in the body helps transfer more vibrations. I'm not that fanatical about it, but I understand, and there's no harm in doing it that way. So I'm just telling you the two ways I do it. So I do the one, you know, tighten string, tighten again. But again, you can do the thing where you almost tighten it, string it, and then tighten it. Either way, it's fine. You don't have to overthink this. And keep this in mind. If you ever been to the Fender factory and watched them assemble the guitars, let's just say there's not a lot of finesse in how it's done. It's kind of just put together. It's what's great about it. It's an assembled instrument for sure. And there's some good things about that. That it's easy and it's fast and it works good. Okay, what else? We need another. Here we go. Here's one. This one is Shut Up, Let's Talk. It's good to see Shut Up, Let's Talk again. It says, what's a better value these days? Okay. A good guitar or a good setup on an affordable guitar? Well, you know, the good value is a good setup, which is not necessarily, I'm saying you have to take it to a tech for a good setup. You can do a good setup. Anybody can. Of course, if you have a tech that does work that you like, you could always do that too. But I think a setup usually makes a difference in a guitar. I wish I came up with this saying, but I like to call inexpensive guitars now fast guitars. I heard this from Marcus at Framus Warwick, and he said it, and it really, he's the guy who runs the Framus Warwick factory and especially the master built shop at them. So he does all these high-end guitars, and he said once he was calling the inexpensive guitars fast guitars, and his statement, which I love, was inexpensive guitars are made very quickly, so not all details can be addressed, and not all details are addressed because the purpose of the guitar is to put it very quickly. And in that analogy, it'd be like going to a fast food restaurant and getting a hamburger. They make you a hamburger. It tastes fine, but if you look at it, yeah, not the bun wasn't centered exactly on the patty. You know what I mean? They didn't do presentation, but when you go to a nice restaurant and you buy a nice meal and they take time to put a presentation on the plate, that's the way he was explaining the difference in the factories of a high-end and an affordable factory and a high-end factory. And I said, I love that. It's not cheap gear versus expensive gear or crappy gear versus good gear. It's literally exactly right. What do you expect? If you buy a $200 guitar, it's going to be put together very quickly, as quickly as they possibly can to hit that price point. And although there could be sometimes cheaper components in that cheap guitar or a less expensive guitar, a lot of times it's the attention to, it's the attention to detail that's missing. So to answer your question, I think you can take an inexpensive guitar and make it pretty amazing and not even have to buy parts, just putting some time in and love into a guitar. I found that if the nut is cut right, the frets feel right, they're leveled correctly, everything plays right, that's more important than, let's say, nice pickups and a nice bridge, for sure, in my experience. So they And then because we're on this, my knees hurt, said cheap meat versus quality meat in the reference I'm talking about. But yes, yes, to the point that that's a different thing. Yes, they could be using cheaper components while making the fast guitar. But again, the biggest issue is how can you make an inexpensive guitar feel play better by putting some time in it? Absolutely. Absolutely. Okay, here's a good one. Philip says, does a neck through versus bolt-on actually affect the tone? I have a video with Neil Moser. Excuse me while I take a drink of water. And I did this video. He let me in his shop and I filmed him, and I will put a link to that video. Neil Moser, if you guys don't know, he was a designer, of course, at BC Rich. And BC Rich was, of course, one of the most iconic neck through guitar manufacturers at all time. And of course, depends on who you talk to, one of the originators, if not one of the early founders of the neck through system for guitars. You know, some say Grover Jackson. I'm, you know, that stuff can make you nuts when you talk to the real parties that were there. But what I will tell you is his statement in that video was that he believes out of the set neck, the bolt on and the neck through, he felt that the bolt on, had more sustain or played better. I think I'm doing off memory. I mean, obviously I was there filming it, but I'll put a link so you can see his words. Obviously he's a master luthier, experienced builder. And it's always nice to see what those builders say. What's funny about this, Philip, is for every builder that says bolt-on is better than neck through, you'll find a builder that says the opposite. But so it's not about which one's exactly right. But what I will tell you is it's nice to hear their insight. In my personal opinion, I prefer bolt-on necks to everything. And for no other reason, just convenience of working on them. It's something I can work on. I like bolt-on necks the way some people like old cars that they can work on, right? Some people like an old pickup truck with a huge, you know, hood that they can open up and have tons of room to get in there and work on the engine. And they don't want to work on these new cars where the engines are packed in there tight and there's all these computers and stuff on there. I feel the same way. I would rather work on an instrument that's easier for me to work on. I want to work on something that's easy to work on. And a bolt-on is a much easier guitar for me to work on after the fact. So I tend to do it that way. Let's see. Hold on. Let's find another one. And then DR Guitar said, Gibson made neck through in 1964, Firebird and Thunderbird. See, DR, this is the question always in play, right? Which is, and then if you really look, you'll find somebody did it before that. And then somebody did it before that. And that's what I keep finding with everything. And what it's all about what you try to focus on. I focus on who popularized everything. Like when I do a lot of videos, like when I did the decade in video, yeah, some people said, oh, that existed the decade before. And I'm like, yeah, but I didn't say that. I said it was popularized. So what's funny is, although that's great, I appreciate DR commenting about that because it's great to know, because I'm sure, you know, that's where the inspiration comes from. But in fact, think about this. There are designs and technology, but designs where companies design it and then it didn't work. And then a company revisits it and then they make it successful and take off. So I think in the argument for BC Rich has always been they popularized it. In other words, they found a consumer for it. They, you know what I mean? And that could be the case. But like I said, you'll find all of these guys argue about it all the time. I have tons of video footage right now, probably about 10 to 12 hours worth, maybe more, and of videos where I've interviewed so many builders, Trev Wilkinson, Paul Reed Smith, just goes on and on. And in the interviews, I like it. But what I notice when you watch the videos is the stories about the history are definitely filtered through the paradigms of those people. So in other words, they see the history the way they see it. I'm not saying they're wrong or right, but that's where it gets confusing. It gets confusing. And for every time they're like, in fact, think about this. One of the most controversial things is who originated or who built the first electric bass. Leo Fender is noted as doing it, but yet there's a controversial thing where I think the family of another designer sued Fender even, or had an issue with Fender because their father was the original designer of the electric bass. However, that's the argument that's hard to figure out is who did it. But what's not hard to argue is who made it popular. And it was obviously Fender. So sometimes that's why I look at that. I'm curious to see how you guys see it that way. you know, how many see it that way as well. I definitely look at who popularized something. I think, you know, rock and roll is a great example, right? Elvis Presley, he popularized rock and roll. Some people are like, oh, he's the father. He invented rock and roll. I'm sorry, guys, I left my phone on. What's funny was, hold on a second. What's funny was, you know, sometimes it's who popularized it. Okay. Let's see what else we got. By the way, thank you for the comment, DR. That was cool to know. And then, okay, here's a good one. Adam says, is a HipShot hardtail bridge easy to install or should I have a tech do it? I know, I'm sorry I keep drinking water, but okay. So, the answer is, here's what I don't know. I don't know what kind of guitar it is and I don't know what you're installing it on. I don't find installing a hardtail bridge is, in fact, well, let me put it this way. Let me tell you what I can tell you for sure without any more information. In my experience, the easiest bridge to install on a guitar is a hardtail style bridge. It's easier to, it's easier than a Tune-O-Matic. It's easier than a Floyd Rose. It's easier than a tremolo system, a hardtail bridge, especially like a HipShot hardtail bridge. Those are one of the easiest bridges to install on any guitar, whether the guitar is brand new and you're building a guitar from scratch, or if you're modifying a guitar, as long as everything lines up. So my answer to you is, I can't tell you if you can do it or if you need a tech, because again, I'm missing like what your skill level, what experience you have, what kind of guitar it is. There's a lot of information, but what I can speak about is, what I will tell you is, if you're going to do it, there's no easier bridge to do it. So I would do some investigating on it and see what you can find. What's great about this is you're going to be able to find tons and tons of information of people probably installing that same bridge on your guitar and get a reference to that. Also, the other thing is, the HipShot guys are pretty good. They got a pretty good tech department. So you can probably ask some really good questions with them as well, if you're having issues about your type of guitar, and they can give you some cool workarounds or experience with that particular guitar. But again, I would need your exact guitar to know if that's a thing, you know what I mean? If it can be done. Let's see. What else do we got? Let's see. And hold on, I'm just skimming, guys, real quick. Okay. Okay, here's a question. This question is from the Asian Redneck. It's always a weird name. It says, Phil, I just checked out the Jackson Pro DK2 Burgundy Mist, and it was crazy neck heavy. Is this common thing with those, or was it something that slipped through QC? I would imagine if it's crazy neck heavy, the body was super light, right? And so the fix on that would be super easy. You just need to know what the total weight of that guitar was, and then go look on other guitars or online and see if there's a guitar heavier than that. I don't know. I thought those guitars were probably alder bodies. They might be basswood. I didn't think they did that, but that's an Ibanez thing for sure for that style of guitar. But if the guitar was neck heavy, it was definitely because the body was just too light. And that can be fixed by just picking a heavier body. So yeah, that happens a lot. Some guitars, they're just neck heavy no matter what they do, because they're going to, but most guitars are neck heavy because obviously the neck is heavier than the body. And so if you buy a guitar that's just a little heavier, if you already own the guitar, that'd be an issue we'd have to deal with. But you tried it, you didn't pick that one. I think if you want that guitar, go online, go on Sweetwater, and they'll have like three or four of them in stock and show you the different weights, and then pick one that's maybe not the heaviest, but you know, obviously if you can tell from the lighter end of the side of the spectrum, go for something a little heavier. That's why, like I said, I always tell people I like light guitars, lightweight guitars, but the truth is I like specific weighted guitars. I like guitars to be in a 7.5 pound range, because I notice as they get towards the 6.5, they get a little top heavy. They resonate a little differently. And once they get closer to 9 pounds, they're a little heavier than I like, and they resonate a little differently. Mostly they have a tighter resonance that I like, but I like the comfort too. So, all right, what else do we got? In fact, hold on, let me pull my other screen. Because, like I said, I like looking at the StreamYard. StreamYard is the service I'm using. you can pay for their service and upgrade it and lose the watermark. I haven't done it yet because I've been experimenting whether I like this or not, or I'm going to go back to OBS. And I like the StreamYard functions, except for the screen that they use. It's nice that I can highlight it like I am right now for you guys, but I hate that I can't see every comment sometimes. It seems like I'm missing some, so I got to look at the original feed that you're looking at as well. So, let's see, what else do we got? Anyone excited about the NAMM show? It's literally like just a few days away. I know so many. Okay, hold on. All right, I'm going to do. Hold on. Here's a super chat while I'm reading. This is from Adam. It says, best humbucker coil splittable guitars for $1,000. Whoa. That's tough. You know what? Let's not use the price point. Let's just go with what's best humbucker coil splittable. And I understand that there's a limit, so I'm not going to try to go crazy. $3,000 guitars. I'm trying to think what my favorite split humbucker is. You know what it is, for $1,000, I'll tell you, my favorite splittable humbucker was the Paul's Guitar SE, for sure. God, I love that. It sounded so good split. I think there's a difference between taking a good pickup and putting a coil split on it versus designing a great pickup that you know will sound good coil split. Does it make sense? And the Paul's Guitar, which is about $1,000, coil splittable, it's fantastic. I really love that guitar. When I look back at the guitars I've reviewed over the last, couple of years, there's certain guitars that stick out in my mind as like, wow, that was really cool. That was really good instrument. It was a really fun day, checking it out and doing stuff. And that was the guitar. So the Paul's Guitar SE, definitely. And like I said, so that hits all the categories. Hold on. Oops. And we got Overview Effects says the PRS S2 Satin is $1,000 new. Very overlooked guitars. This is true. This is as you guys know, I like PRS S2 as much, if not more, than Core, because I like them. I think they're more of a working man's guitar. I think I like S2 a lot, but I don't necessarily need all the beautiful aesthetics of a guitar. I'm just not into that. It's not my thing for the most part. I'm going to be reviewing the new S2 594. I don't know which version I'm going to be reviewing. But stay tuned. My understanding is that we'll be here. So when I come back from the NAMM show, literally it'll be one of the first videos you see after the NAMM show is me doing a review of that guitar. That is my understanding. So I'm excited about that. I plan to do two videos. Maybe you guys will be interested in this. I'll do a full review of the 594 S2 so we can check that out. And then I'm going to do a video comparing it against the Core 594 to see, what's the difference between the $1,500 Made in USA S2 and the $3,600 Core. So, and then BK, I'm going to grab yours because again, real quick, and then I'll grab a new non-super chat. BK says, happy Friday. Are Fluence pickups overrated or overhyped? I've only played them once and it was in that Ibanez. I did a video. I'll put a link to that. I did it with Henning Pauling. And my reaction to that video is very easy to understand. I was very, very, very shocked and pleased with the pickups. I would love to try a set of Fluence pickups in a guitar. I just haven't had the time or the energy to try to buy a set and install them yet in a guitar. I haven't figured out which one to do. There will be a set this year because obviously I'm doing all the pickup reviews and I have it set up to where I can do pickup reviews. So I will definitely get a set of those. I reached out to Fluence. I didn't really hear anything back, but for a lot of the pickup reviews, it's okay if I don't get company interaction. This is something that I allocated a budget to, and I'll be buying a set of those pickups to try. So, BK, not only will I be trying the Fluence pickups, I'll be comparing them to the EMGs and other pickups as well. I'll be able to actually compare the Fluence in real time to the EMGs. So you get a reference. We'll be able to see how much different they are. That's another thing too about the comparison of that stuff. It seems really good. It seems like you guys like it. I'm excited about it, but I notice a lot of companies not so super excited about doing comparison videos. So Okay, so what else do we got? We got, hold on a second. Let me grab. Okay, here's a question. This is from Eric. He says, which amp do you think is better, Blue Guitar Amp 1 or the Black Spirit 200? Well, you got me at a disadvantage, Eric, because I just told Lawrence Petros at lunch today that I like the Black Spirit more than the Blue Amp 1. So I'm going to say that because it's, I just said it off. Obviously, if I said it off the air, I should say it on the air. I really love the Blue Amp 1. It's a great amp. I like how light it is. I like how small it is. I think sticking it in a gig bag, I think you can't be beat. But I really, for some reason, keep going back to the Black Spirit 200. In my mind, with the tube amps, with the nice amps I own, the tube amps I own, I generally will play those tube amps. I'm not going to play a lot of anything else. I'm going to play, you know, my Dirty Shirley or the PRS or, you know, my Mesa or Fenders or the Marshalls or, you know, Dr. Z or whatever else I'm playing at the moment. But for some reason, the Black Spirit is like a great amp. I plug in and I'm just very happy with it. I'm not blown away with it. I never say like the Black Spirit is the greatest amp ever. I would never say that. What I would say is I feel like I don't have a great analogy. It's just a great amp. I was going to say it's like the Toyota Camry of amps. You know, it's dependable and it's good, but really that's what it is. It's small, it's light, it sounds good. I can plug pedals in it. I can take it to a gig. I can take it, you know, I played in front of 26,000 people with a Black Spirit amp and I was ripping the face off of the people in front of me. The thing was so loud. I got really carried away at that event towards the last like four songs. We did like 18 or 19 songs. It was 2 hours performance. And when I did it towards the last four songs, I figured when's the next time, actually let's be very clear about this. This is the last time I'm ever going to play in front of 26,000 people, screaming people, you know, in an arena. And I said, when am I going to ever do this again? And I'm like, never. So what I did was I cranked that sucker. And this is a true story. I'll share with you. I was so loud that Pixie Licks, or as you guys know, Steve from Boston, was behind me, behind my amp. And at the end of the show, he goes, you were so loud that I was over him. I was drowning him out. And remember, he's standing in front of his amp and my amp's in front of him. And I was so loud that I was killing him with my sound. And I said, yeah, and it was the last four songs. And I was just going for it. That Black Spirit was delivering. So that being said, I think that they're both great. If you don't need that small form factor of the Blue Amp and, then having the Black Spirit, what I like about it is two things. One, I like that it has digital effects, has effects in it. So I like having delays and reverbs and all that stuff where the Blue has the reverb and it sounds great. It's just nice having the other effects too. The other thing I really like about the Black Spirit is the Blue Amp 1, it's nice that it's on the floor and you have a foot pedal, but here's what I have a problem with. I got to run the guitar into the Blue Amp and then I run a speaker cable, like a 10 foot to 20 foot speaker cable to a cabinet behind me. Where on the Black Spirit, I just put it on top of the cabinet and I don't have to worry about that. And I can just turn the selector with my hand, although it has a foot switch, but it has its own cable. So that's a very long way. I just want to give you the reasoning for both. And I think there's strong reasons, obviously, since I've reviewed both. I currently own both, by the way, and I really like both, but I tend to like the Black Spirit. The other thing I will tell you, so you guys know, is that something I've learned is a loophole is if you're going to buy a Black Spirit amp, definitely buy it from Thomann in Germany. And the reason is if you go on the Thomann site, they're a lot cheaper than anywhere else in the US. So if you go to Sweetwater, Musician's Friend, anywhere, go to Thomann. And the reason is when I was on Thomann doing some research about Harley Benton guitars, I noticed that a lot of the made in China product, especially the amplifier market, were really cheap in Thomann, probably because there's no the tariffs. There's no tariffs. But for some reason, if you buy it from Thomann, because they're not the way it works legally, you get to buy it for less. So what I'm telling you is you can buy a Black Spirit for like 20% less with shipping if you buy it from Thomann. So do that. Now, if anyone's bought one from that and has even personal more experience than what I'm saying, let me know. But that's what I've observed from watching it, is that there's certain things you can buy from Tolman and get cheaper than you can here in the US. And hey, man, who doesn't want to save $200 on something? That's great. Okay. What else? Let's see. Hold on. Let's see if I can go this way. And see, I can't highlight it. Let me see if I can find it. I'm trying to find Skarma Guitar Super Chat. I see it, but I can't highlight it. So unfortunately, Skarma Guitar, I'm going to highlight it, but I'm going to read it, but I can't highlight it because I can't see it on, I can't click on it. It's weird how it gets rid of stuff from me. Skarma Guitar did a super chat. It says, because you're my hero and you're going to build one I made. Yeah, so, you know, Skarma Guitar built a body and neck, and we're going to do, I think what we finally decided, I thought instead of doing a giveaway, I think what we decided is I'm going to do a sharpen my axe with the body and neck, put it together, deck it out. And then what we'll do is we'll put it for sale, probably on eBay. And then what will happen is 100% of the proceeds will go towards a charity, and then somebody will be able to buy it. That was the idea. Instead of doing a giveaway, was like, hey, let's help a charity out, and then somebody can buy the instrument. And then that's fair, because if somebody buys it for, you know, $50 or $500, it's whatever the fair market pulled, and then the money can go to charity. But either way, that's the idea to do that. So yes, actually I'm excited about that as well. So very, very cool. By the way, Sean, get better. He's had pneumonia. Skarma Guitar's had pneumonia. So, Drumbum 73 says, fixin' to buy me a PRS Mira. Is yours a SE-S2 or Core? Thoughts on the SE Mira? So Drumbum, my two Miras, I have two, are both Cores. I've never tried the SEs. I have tried the S2s. I like the S2s, but I like my Cores, and it has nothing to do with like Cores are better than S2s or S2s are better than SEs. I literally, when I bought my Mira, my first Mira, the one I play 99% of the time, that's the only one that existed, was the Mira. In fact, when I bought the Mira, it was the cheapest PRS you could pretty much buy. And that's why I bought it. I bought it because I was like, oh, I can buy a PRS. And I was a dealer for PRS. I just bought it because I was like, I'm not, as a dealer, I couldn't justify spending, you know, the money for a PRS. You know what I mean? I'm around guitars all day, and I didn't want to buy an expensive guitar to have at the house. I bought a Mira. I loved it. I loved it so much that I go, I'm going to get a real PRS now. And I got a hiring Core, and I've never loved any PRS as much as my Mira, maybe because it's my first impression. Sometimes they call the handshake. It was my first handshake with PRS. In other words, handshake is when you put your hand on the neck and you play a guitar. Sometimes that first impression is you know what I mean? Nothing ever gets better than that. Then what happened was a friend of mine who's also a patron, sold his Mira. It's a one piece maple top Mira. It's a very limited, very hard to find Mira. And he was selling it, and he said, do you want to buy it? And I bought it in the idea that I'm like, I don't know if I want it or not, but I knew the opportunity was now. So I bought it. I really do like it. It's over in the rack right now. I don't play it very often, but I do feel more comfortable because I play the Mira so much that I'm afraid that obviously it's not going to last. You know what I mean? I mean, it's definitely going to need, I'm probably getting ready for my first refret on it. So I'm going to refret it. And, you know what I mean? It's just, I mean, I work that guitar. I play it. It's got dents and dings everywhere. I mean, it's a relic Mira. It's a guitar I drag everywhere, play everywhere. So I beat it up. And what's funny is I can't even tell you it's a great guitar. Cause if you notice, one of the comments I got was, Jean at PRS said, when she saw it a couple times in my videos and she says, hey, do you need a truss rod cover? I'll send you a truss rod cover. And I said, no, I leave the truss rod cover off. Cause my Mira, just that one, the neck moves all the time. You know what I mean? It just like, you know, it gets cold, the neck moves, and then it gets warm and the neck moves, and I have to make adjustments. But it's one of those things where, although that drives me crazy, the guitar, the way it sounds and plays, just it trumps all. So SD Design said, no, your gear. Ryan from 60 Cycle Hum said that once, and I think it ruined me forever. He's like, no, your gear. I don't know why he said it like that. He was being smart aleck, but I laugh so hard that I can't say or think no, your gear without hearing no, your gear. I don't know. Thank you, Ryan, for doing that to me. all right, let's do, that was easy. I did that just because I wanted to take a break for a second from answering a question. So, all right, what else do we got? And again, I'm not seeing any questions about the NAMM show, but, you know, I'm excited about the NAMM show. I will be there the entire time. So, you know, I will be at NAMM show. I will be in Anaheim Tuesday to Sunday. Woo! I'm gonna be in the gear. Let's see. Hold on. I'm trying to grab a question mark for. Oh, here's one. You know what, David? I'm answering your question because you got 6,000 question marks before your question. So hopefully it's a good one. It says, hey, Phil, can you sharpen my axe? Oh, I knew it was going to be that. No, I'm just kidding. It says, I have a Godin LGX SA, nice SD pickup, Seymour Duncan, but it needs some upkeep and maybe a parallel switch thing instead of the tapped. The Know Your Gear or the Sharpen My Axe mod videos are, I don't know what to say about that stuff. Like I said, I did a few last year. I didn't do as many as I hoped. Main problem was I had one video that got destroyed. What I mean by destroyed was the guitar that I finished, I shipped it out. And then when we were editing, I made a rookie mistake. It happens. I shipped the guitar out. And then when I was editing the video, something didn't come right out in the video. It didn't, the audio was wrong. There was editing issues. So I needed to fix it by filming again, but I didn't have a guitar to film again. So, that one got canned. So, long story short, I'm trying to get to the NAMM show, do the NAMM show, come back from the NAMM show, and then put some, you know, focus on the Sharpen My Axe this year. And the way I've decided to do that is I gave up on sponsorship. It's just, it's stupid. So kind of like how I have the patrons sponsor the live show every week, which is great because it's what pays the bills to be here and do hangouts with you guys every week. What I did was I allocated an amount of patron funds last year to do Sharpen My Axe. That's what I decided to do. I thought for sure one of the two things would happen, right? One, I would find a sponsor, or two, I would save up the money and have enough to fund the videos. I was telling Lawrence that today at lunch today too. I've given up on a lot of the companies trying to interact. There's just, I love all the companies that interact with the channel. It makes it really possible. But what I do notice is, as a whole, is that a lot of you will watch a lot more content and watch a lot more of the videos I do if I do more videos that I think a lot of us are more interested in, and less of what the companies are interested in having me do. So I'm going to fund more of the videos that way. So Sharpen My Axe will be done that way. So one of the things I'm going to be announcing is is a PDF downloadable sheet that explains what you're going to have to do if you want to do a Sharpen My Axe video. So to make my life easier. So there you go. So I don't know why it's not. So there you go, David. I'm just going to, you know, tell you how it goes. How we're going to do the process. Okay. Hold on a second. Hold on. You know what? I have some, give me a second. Let's see if I can. All right. Okay. Here's Mike. Mike says, help. What should I do to get crazy versatile tube set up? I have a Fender Super 60 with EVM 112. Love everything about it, but want more high gain in addition to what it offers. So you have a Fender Super 60 and you want more distortion? That's an easy thing. So I'm going to try to analyze this question, Mike, and hopefully help some viewers. Because a lot of times when I answer these questions, I'm just trying to hopefully we'll talk about something that can help somebody else as well too. So what should I do to get crazy versatile tube setup? So in your, that question, I think what you're saying is how can I get your Super 60? And I'm assuming you're saying Super 60, there's two Fenders, right? There's a Supersonic 60. Is there a Fender Super 60? Before I go on a tirade, can I look that up? Hold on. I'm going to say there is probably a Fender Super 60. And okay. What I'm finding is the only Fender Super 60 is the Supersonic 60. Oh, wait, here's a Super 60. Let's see what it says. Yep. So there is a Super 60. See, and it's a tube combo. Okay. And I'm going to say it's from the 80s because it's got that I'm from the 80s look. Let's take a look. There you go. So this is the amp. I'm assuming, again, it could be Supersonic, but this is it. So it's a Super 60 tube combo amp from Fender. Sweet. Let me go back. Okay. So the question is, how do you get more gain out of that thing? I would put a pedal in front of it. You can use a boost pedal and push the amp. That's the first thing. You don't necessarily want to grab a tube screamer because tube screamers have an effect on the sound and you don't know if that's a sound. Boost pedals are a great way to get a tube amp to do more breakup. The Dirty Shirley I have has more gain than I need, but I like to run the gain halfway and then use a boost in front of it. So that's usually way to go. Let's see, hold on. And, to answer your question, I know you got the EVM. So, you know, the EVM is a great, the EVM 12 is a great speaker, but I don't remember it breaking up a whole lot. So you might be able to get more breakup if you switch to a Celestion speaker, something that has a voice coil that's going to give it more distortion. So my first recommendation would be do a boost pedal. And then the second would be change out that speaker. And you're saying high gain. And high gain is something that I'm like, well, then I would at that point just go with a high gain pedal and use the amp as a clean platform. That's another idea as well. Let's see. So Eric says NAMM is for the elite. I like that saying. I don't know what that means. Eric the Red. Eric, NAMM is for the people who pay for the NAMM fee to get in and or for the people who can figure out how to get somebody to give them a pass to get in. But it is a cool thing. If you haven't done and seen a NAMM show, I would recommend it. This will be my 16th, I think, NAMM show. I hope it might be more, but I'm going to say 16. And I have to admit, at this point, the NAMM show, like anything that you've done for a long time, becomes more about seeing the people I know there and seeing the industry and seeing how it works and seeing some of the product than it is about exciting guitars. Because for me, it's like the guitars are just so hard. Everything's so hard to hear there and touch there and get a sense of it. So it gets a little tricky. I have some super chats. Hold on a second. By the way, back to the first question about the Super 60, Tom suggests any LPD boost. I will suggest the Saguaro boost, or for anyone who doesn't live in Arizona, the Saguaro. But here, if you live in Arizona, we know it says a Saguaro. I have some super chats are stacking up, and let me get to it. Age says, are locking tuners the best option for staying in tune? No, the best option to keep a guitar in tune is make sure the nut is cut correctly. I have 90% of the time in my experience, when a guitar is not staying in tune, it's because the nut is not correct. Given, and that being said, even when sometimes like, oh, it's the tremolo's moving. But see, here's the thing. The tremolos, you know what I mean? They're never really as big of a problem as people think they are. They're not the problem, but the nut has to be right. I'd say that's first. So tuning stability, let's do it this way. I got a great answer for you, Edge. The tuning stability of a guitar, in my opinion, is first making sure the nut is cut correctly. Second, then it's making sure that the bridge is set correctly, whether that be the tremolo or the hardtail, but usually we're going to worry about the tremolo if we're worrying about the bridge. And then third is going to be the tuning keys. And locking keys to me are just about fast restrings. I will say this, but generally speaking, locking keys, because they're locking keys, are nicer. They are going to be better quality tuning keys than some of the cheaper keys. Although keep in mind, what's driving me crazy right now is a lot of you guys that send me personal emails, you're finding all these weird, crappy locking keys out there that are like $12. And I'm like, dude, I would rather have nice quality 18-to-1 quality made of steel, brass or aluminum or something that I know what they are, and quality gears. Cause that's what's problem when they do these encased tuners. You don't know what kind of gear is in there. What's the sprockets in there. It's sometimes it's just junk. I mean, they're supposed to be made of brass, but they sometimes can make these things out of junk. They're not put together really well. And so you can actually get a crappy locking key that's worse, than a traditional key. And to me, a locking key that's not made correctly is actually more problematic. I've had now, it's growing, the problem grows. In the last 2 years, I've seen more and more where I have a guitar and I'm doing either repairing it for a customer, working on a customer guitar, or doing a review. And the locking key is so cheap that the locking mechanism, it's going loose and then the string is going flat. And then I go and check it and it's like, I got to retighten that lock. You shouldn't have to turn those locks once they're locked. So to answer your question, I don't think the locking keys are going to help your guitar stay in tune. They're not your best option. Your best option is to make sure you have your nut is cut correctly, make sure that your bridge is set up correctly, and then make sure that you have good tuning keys. Although locking keys make restrings fast and easy, and that's always nice. So that's my order of issue. And then, like I said, look at I had this Reggie. As you guys know, Reggie does some super chats. He always asks me questions. He sent me a personal email the other day, and he was asking me about locking keys. And I let him know I trust Hipshot. I trust. I don't even trust Spurzel that much anymore. I've had issues with them, although I still like them. To me, right now, I have good, consistent quality. I feel good putting my recommendation next to products like Hipshot, Godo, and Ratio tuning keys. I've had really good experiences with those, to the point where I haven't had a bad experience yet. I like Grover's. I like, Spurzel. I like Schaller. I like those tuning keys, although I've all experienced a bad key with them so far. So I'm not saying because I had one bad or two bad experiences, all their keys are bad, don't buy them. But it's a lot nicer for me to say Hipshot, never a problem. GraphTech, never a problem. Godo, never a problem. That's really nice. I like that. It feels good to recommend something where I have never had a problem. You guys out there, you might put some comments that you've had problems. I love hearing that stuff. It's always great because I can only have so many experiences, where if there's hundreds of us all having experiences, it's a great way to figure out what's going on. But there you go. Let's see. The next question is from... Oh, it's from Edge again. Oh, okay. So he just re-asked the question in a different way, but it's the same question. Jacob's got a question. It says, install the Highwood bridge on my 96 Tex-Mex Strat. Thank you for your recommendation. It's much more comfortable. What's your favorite analog delay? So you guys don't know what Jacob's talking about. I recommended the Highwood bridge saddles, which are the bent saddles that hook this way, so that when you put the screw in there, the screw never comes up the top, so you don't have to have that cheese grater effect on the bottom of your hand. And so I'm glad it worked out for you. It was a good recommendation. Again, it was nice because I've had good experience with that product, so it's nice to recommend it. What's my favorite analog delay? I'm horrible at this because I should be saying, I feel like, actually, you know what? I feel like I should be like, it's the blah, 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 this great, amazing analog delay pedal. But the reality is, my favorite delay pedals are this. Analog, I love the Taurus Acid Reflux. I still use it. It's on my board right behind me right now. Whatever. I can't point to it, but trust me, it's there. Acid Reflux by Taurus Pedals. I'll put a link to him. I've been using that pedal now since my channel started and still using it. Great. I really like the Boss analog delay. As my chair creaks. What else? I have a delay that somebody sent me, but I don't want to recommend it yet until I checked it out. And so those are the two analog delays I like. I like the Boss one and the Carbon Copy. And I use the Carbon Copy Light as well, but the Carbon Copy. So to me, Carbon Copy, Acid Reflux, and then the Boss, it's the Purple Analog Delay. I really like those delays. There's fancy, great delays out there. I'm not a fancy delay guy. I'm a three knobs, set it and forget it kind of delay. I don't need to be programming delay for an hour. Although I appreciate the guys that can do that or want to do that. That is not how I play guitar. Delay to me is, I've taken this from Joe Bonamassa. He said he likes a delay to be atmospheric. And I totally related to when he said that. Like, yes, I just want delay on. I leave it on whether I'm soloing or playing rhythm. You know, I like to be on and not have a problem with it. Okay. The next one is Fish Market Studio says, hey, Phil, what is your opinion on the Greg Bennett discontinued electric guitars, not acoustic? Will you make a video about them? I own a Torino TR2 SG. Love it. Thanks again for the content. No, I don't foresee myself doing a review of the Greg Bennett guitar. You know, not in particular. Because I don't have access to any, and there's, you know, I don't have any reason to do it. Although thank you for the recommendation of the guitar. I mean, if I get the opportunity, I have been a dealer for Greg Bennett before, and I sold a lot of Greg Bennett guitars. Greg Bennett guitars are fantastic. They were made by Samick. It was their line. Greg Bennett, if you don't know, was a designer. He designed a lot of the Washburn guitars before working for Samick and doing the Greg Bennett line. Very, very accomplished, well-respected guitar designer. Obviously, Samick, like Cort, is two of the largest manufacturers, OEM, in other words, making products for the guitars. So, of course, they're great guitars. I think if you're looking for a good guitar and you want to spend short money, I think you can't find a better great deal than like a Samick guitar, especially the old Made in Korea ones and stuff. But even the new ones in Indonesia are very good. I had heard the same thing. They're discontinuing the line of guitars, electric guitars. So that's the answer on that. Bill. Hey, Bill, what's up, buddy? He says, $10 microcube. Is there a better battery amp? $10. I'm sorry. I got to drink water. I'm going to lose my voice in this show. I can tell. $10 microcube. Is there a better battery amp? Not for $10. The microcube by Roland is what I use. I have a microcube. I really like the Fly by Blackstar. I do like it. I really liked the THR5. I know everybody likes the THR10, but I tried the THR5. I really wanted the amp to be really tiny. I think the THR5, in my opinion, is slightly better than the Cube, and the THR10 was probably even better than that. So to answer your question, I like the THR5 by Yamaha more than I like the Microcube, but I really like the Microcube, especially for the price. For $99 new, and if you're getting it for $10, dude, it's a solid deal. It's great. The thing I can tell you about my Microcube that is funny is I've had my Microcube since 2006. I bought it in 2006 new. It is the guitar on my bench. If you watched any of my bench videos, at some point it's got to be in there. It's red. I have a red one. And what I can tell you is I have left it on for weeks and months. It just stays on. I leave it on all the time. Sometimes I look over and I go, I haven't turned it off. So, so that amp has been abused for a long time. 18 years? Is it 18 years? No. Yeah, right? Am I doing that? No, 14 years. 14 years. 14 years I've been abusing that amp. It's a great amp. So, I mean, what can you say about that? And then Thomas Graham said, Katana MK2 or Blues Cube? Ah, see, now this is what's funny. See, what I love about talking about gear is because it's by the logic, I should say the Blues Cube. But to be honest with you, as much as I like the Blues Cube, I did a shootout. I didn't do a video. I did a shootout. Me and some friends, we took the Blues Cube, the Roland Cube, the Katana Mark One, the first one, and something else, another Roland type product. And we end up all liking the Katana. So I would imagine I like the Katana more than the Blues Cube. And I like the Blues Cube. The Blues Cube's a great amp. In fact, fantastic amp. But in my personal opinion, for the amount of money the Blues Cube costs, you can get the Katana for less money, and you're going to get something that's going to get close to the Blues Cube's tone, plus have give you other tones as well. And I didn't play the Blues Cube and went, whoa, it blows the Katana away. It has some nice qualities. I like the Blues Cube, But I would say of the two, I would pick the katana. If it was me and my money, I would pick the katana. But here's what's really crazy. As much as I like the Blues Cube, because I've recommended it before, and it's a great amp. And I had one for a while, and I got rid of it for no particular reason, just like everything, essentially it cycled out. What I would tell you is, if it wasn't my money and somebody was just going to give me one, I'd probably pick the katana. I like the katana for feature set more than the Blues Cube. Although I will tell you this, I love the way the Blues Cube looks more. Not that that should matter, but it's just in there. Smelly Cats Jazz said, weird question. Do you play any piano? Nope. It's helped a ton for me on the guitar and other instrument. I get why colleges require it. Yeah. Now what I can tell is I can't play the piano, but I know music theory based on the piano. And at the Lesson Academy, I require that all teachers taught guitar using a piano in the room. So, piano is the easiest way to, I think, for a person to understand music. Guitar is very convoluted and very scary. And I like, you know what I mean? It's easy. Piano is so easy, right? All the whole notes are white keys. All the flats and sharps are black keys. It makes so much sense the way it's laid out. So I don't play piano. Now, when I say don't play piano, can I play a couple piano chords? Can I do a ditty on a piano? Sure. Right. I could probably convince somebody for about a whole 30 to 60 seconds, almost a minute, that I could play piano before you go, I don't think this guy knows piano. Right. Cause I know that much, you know what I mean? I know enough to play a little bit. I will tell you a little fun, weird factoid that I think is strange to mention. The Tone King, from the Tone Kings channel, those of you guys that know the Tone Kings channel, he is a very good piano player, which is really crazy. He has a piano. I was at with him once, this is a while ago, at a Sam Ash, and he sat down and just started playing the piano. I might have been at a Guitar Center, but I think it was Sam Ash. And the piano teacher that taught there came out and was like, wow, you're really good. So you know, a little fun fact. I don't think he lets that out of the bag. I might be like screwing him over right now, telling you guys a secret. But I hope not. So like I said, so you know, if you're a fan of that channel, you now know he's a really good piano player, which is only weird to mention because you'd think that would have come up in all his videos somehow. Raymond says, will changing Fender line names hurt resale value 5 years down the line? Love the Tele Ventura, but I feel like the recent name changes will hurt the resale. No, because I think it's just a generational thing. Each generation will learn the Fenders as they know them. Think of this. Most of the Fenders we know their names weren't their original names. And so I don't think that's going to hurt them in the long term. I think what you have to think about, Raymond, is we talked about this, I think last week, the week before, about the fact that, you know, Fender might be changing the new names, new products, and naming old products for website searches. But another thing that's interesting, and we talked about this before when they did the Player Series strats, one of the advantages to Fender changing the names is not to have to fight the used gear so much. So, you know, you have a Mexican standard Strat for decades, and then all of a sudden you go, oh, it's a Player Strat. And sure, the hardcore gear fanatic, they know what's going on. Average Joe or Jane guitar player who plays guitar, because I don't mean newbie. I'm not even talking about brand new guitar players. I have friends that play guitar for 20 years. They don't know. They know nothing about gear. They can just play, right? Now, some players just plug in and play. They'll just be like, I have a friend. He told me once, he goes, I have a guitar. This is how I met him. He says, I have a guitar. And I said, what kind? He goes, I don't know. It's a guitar. Like, he didn't know the brand. It didn't matter to him. He's like, I don't know. I've been playing for like 10 years. So this is a guitar. He's like, what does the brand matter? And I'm like, yeah, I love that, by the way. I love that about them. But anyways, my point is, to those players, they could walk in a store, pick up a Player Strat and go, really like this. I think I'll get a used one. Go online and find standards and go, oh, I don't, that's not a Player Strat. You see what I'm saying? So sometimes changing the name is beneficial that way. You don't have to compete with your older products. You know what I mean? As silly as it is, a name change or a couple specification changes makes it to where you don't have to compete with the old product, which is nice. Let's see. I got two questions. I got some pinned questions. We're on the tail end of the show, but I got a couple non super chat questions. Tom says, Gibson, He says, why so many videos at once? Discuss. I think he's talking about the new Gibson's TV channel. They announced Gibson this week, announced a TV channel. And what they did is they built a website and they're consolidating all the YouTube videos on the website. They're still available on the YouTube. In fact, when you go there, you're just clicking that and then it's taking you back to YouTube. They're not the first originator of this idea. Premier Guitar does it. I mean, other places, entities have done it. I think I, on my webpage, on my website, have all my videos, like repair videos, listed. So you can go to my webpage and it puts them out in a menu. But when you click them, obviously, it's taking you right back to YouTube, just like a playlist. There is some advantages to doing that. Let me tell you what the advantages are. First of all, you have more control. There's a couple... actually, let's put it this way. So there's a couple things about this. There's a couple dumb things to do it that way, and there's a couple good reasons to do it that way, and I'll highlight what's both so you guys are aware. Let's get the dumb one so we can stay on the positive. The only really dumb one is, of course, just like I said, I'm admitting I've done it too, so I'm not calling them out. Obviously, telling your consumer market, whether they're your customers or your viewers, to come to your website is only dumb because the consumer has decided they want to be on YouTube, right? So it's like, it's like, hey, you know where all the customers are. They're all right here. They're going to the mall. Let's say the mall analogy, right? They're all at the mall. And I'm like, what I'm going to do, even though I have a store in the mall, is I'm going to buy a space offside the mall so I can get the traffic there. It just seems like not a great way to do things, right? You just, why not just lean into what the consumer already wants? It's an easier fight. So that's the reason why it's dumb. Again, a lot of us do it. Because we have this content out there. In fact, Premier Guitar, so much, their frustrating thing that they do is they do that thing where you watch it on YouTube, but you only get like the first 30 seconds, and then you got to go to their website to finish it, which drives me absolutely bonkers. Because it's doing what they want it to do. It's making me jump over because I want to watch the rest of the video, so I go over. Now, the reason why you want to in-house it is because there's a couple things about that. First of all, not in Gibson's case, likely, but in Premier Guitar's case and other cases, you can sell your AdSense to Google, or you can have advertisers then pay for your website. And that's something different than what you can do on YouTube. Obviously, once you keep a viewer or get a customer over into your website, now you have more ownership over them. You have more control of what they're going to see and do necessarily with Gibson, where, you know, our YouTube, where if Gibson is on YouTube primarily and you're watching Gibson, the next video is about Fender and the next video is about Schecter, and then they've lost you down there, they can consolidate the two. That could be an idea as well, why they're doing it. But ultimately, I think, well, the reason why I think they launched all the videos at one time is because, again, they're trying to fill up that the Gibson TV website. The real truth is we don't know what the answer is. Not the answer, whether or not it's a good idea or bad idea, because, again, a good idea or a bad idea is determined by its success. So if a year from now, everybody's watching Gibson TV, it was a great idea. If a year from now, no one's doing it and they're still just watching on YouTube, well, then it wasn't a great idea. I actually, like I said, and I've called out Gibson when it was time to call them out, and I've gave them accolades when it's time to give them accolades. What I will say about Gibson is, as long as they're trying new ideas, and it seems like to do Gibson TV, they really created a lot of content. I think that's great. I think anything they do to be part of the community, to build guitars, that's the stuff you want to see, right? So I, like I said, as Gibson goes, I think it's good news. And I think a lot of people mentioned that they really liked Gibson TV. I watched a few of the videos. I enjoyed them. And then, you know what? And then because we're on that subject, hold on. Somebody just said, E. Smith says, I really like Gibson TV. The episode on their factory for cool. I wish they would go in depth, okay, I get it. We're typing on phones and stuff. Okay, it says, I like Gibson TV episode of the factory tour. It was cool. I wish they would go in depth a little more. I'm glad to see them touring things, turning things around a bit. Absolutely. Absolutely. The reality is this. We all, all of us that own Gibson guitars like the guitars, want the company to do well because it just makes you feel better, right? It's nice to know when you like a product, it's nice to know when the company that makes the product aren't douche nozzles. I don't have a better word. Sorry, guys. When they're not jerks, I like it. That right? I don't need to love a company. I don't even need to like a company. So, you know, I've never really felt the need to go, oh, I like X brand guitars and I like brand X guy because he's cool. I could care less about that. I just don't want to buy X guitars and I don't like enjoy hearing from random people, oh, did you know brand X owner, he's a jerk. You're like, I wish that wouldn't connect, right? I just want to buy product I like and enjoy it. So again, that's why I said once before with Gibson, either I hope they make a positive impact on the community or I hope they just go away, shut up and just make guitars. You don't have to be an internet celebrity to sell a guitar. I don't understand where that connects. Just make good guitars. We'll buy them. I mean, there's enough of us. There's enough of these channels that all have crap behind us gear. And then enough people watching these channels to understand that there's a consumer out there that wants to buy guitars and enjoys guitar and enjoys guitar music. You make good music. And if you can add something and elevate the community by making some good content on top of it, good for you. You know, when I think of that, I think of like Brian Wampler. He makes great pedals and I enjoy his content. Scott GHS, right? He makes good pedals and then all of a sudden, bam, he makes great content. That's great. You know what I mean? And to be honest with you, I've seen some examples that I'm going to leave off where they make good products and they start making videos and they're not very good at making videos and they stopped, and good for them for stopping because they weren't adding any value for us. And it's not necessarily in it. So that's my tirade on that. Like I said, but ultimately I'm excited about Gibson TV as well. I think I look at it as a positive thing, if that helps. And I keep drinking water, guys, but I'm really losing my voice today. And of course, as always, please leave me comments down below when the video replays, when you're watching this, how you feel about Gibson TV as well, and positives and negatives. I can't think of any negatives other than, like I said, a lot of us just rather consume it on YouTube, but I don't think there's any problem putting it on a website. Obviously, I did it. Although that's not where I direct you guys, I still did it. And on that note, did you guys see Phil X went from Framus to Gibson? I don't know if you know, that's the understanding, is that he's left Framus. I haven't 100% confirmed that, although I could probably reach out to Framus and find out for sure. My understanding is that he's left Framus and now with Gibson. I'm not entirely shocked by that in any way. Obviously, he's always been a Gibson fan. He's a great player. He's definitely elevated his stature. I mean, he's come a long way from playing YouTube Americana music videos to now playing with Bon Jovi and touring the world. I think having a brand like Epiphone Gibson behind him is a powerful thing. Of course, I like the guys at Framus Warwick, to the point where I'm like, you know, I'd like that to all stay together too. But the good thing is what I've learned is I can still be friends with Phil X and I can still be friends with Framus. And I'm sure there's no fallout between those two guys. Is not that I know of in any way. So, and then, hold on a second. Hold on. There was a great question. Okay. I want to do this because we're on still in the subject, because stay on Gibson for a little bit. And then before we go on, they lie in Ohio. What? I'm near you. What does that mean? Is that a thing? Like, is Ohio people known for that? I thought Ohio seems like one of those states where everybody seems really polite and nice. Am I missing something? So, all right, they lie in Ohio. That's your sign on. That's interesting. Says, I've heard they have quality control. Oh, I heard their quality control at Gibson sucks at Gibson. The newest Gibsons I've put my hands on have been very good. I've seen no issues. And to be honest with you, it depends on how you feel about quality control. I've played Gibsons, and for the most part, even when the quality control was not very good, they played fine. They sounded good. They had issues. You need to see issues. You know, there you go. The good question though is that I think they're doing better than they've done in a while. And then Produce Like a Pro's in the house. What? He says, hello, my friend. I have to come down and visit you soon. Hey man, I'm going to be on your side of the planet in California soon. So I'll make sure I'll text you and we'll say hi at the NAMM show. I'm sure you'll be at the NAMM show. If not, if you're smart enough to ditch the thing, I will find a way to say hi to you either way. I know I'll be seeing Glenn, and so good. I hope, good. Look forward to seeing you. Again, as I know, and you know what? So as you guys watch the rebroadcast of this, I'll put a link down below when Warren and I did a video together at TGU. And it's a fantastic video. He's a fantastic player with tons of knowledge. It was a great video. I would put it in my, I should have done my top 10 favorite videos last year. I didn't do that. I saw some channels do that. I thought it was a great idea. I never thought about like, what's my favorite top 10 videos. You know what I should do? Probably too late to do it last year. This year, maybe what I should do is do a survey on you, on the viewers. What were your favorite top 10 videos? And then we'll put that out there. But Warren was one of my favorite top 10 videos for last year, for sure. And I'm not just saying that because he's here right now. I've said it before publicly, so I'm in the clear, I think. DR Guitar says, what am I looking forward to most at NAMM? Let's see. Two things I'm looking forward to at NAMM. As you guys know, and definitely Lawrence got enough of it today in his ears to hear about, is I'm fanatically in love with my Dirty Shirley amp. I think at this point in my life, if I had the Dirty Shirley and my Princeton amp from Fender, I think I'm done. Of course, I'll continue to check out amps and try amps. You have to understand that I've had the Princeton now, again, since before my channel started, and I've been playing it. And as much as I love all the amps I've reviewed and amps I've owned and amps I've checked out, there's just something about that amp that always draws me back. I'm just back to that amp. There's something I connect with. It's not that it's a better amp than the other amp, just something I like about that. The Dirty Shirley is definitely that amp for me as well. But that being said, there's a new version of the Dirty Shirley that I was seen a picture of. I'm excited about. It's going to be great. I'm really, really stoked about seeing it and hearing it in person. I like the Dirty Shirley. This is just another kind of version of that. That's got some features that I think are going to be cool. So I'm excited about that. In fact, let's do it real quick. I'm excited about categories. I'm excited. That's the amp I'm excited about seeing. I'm not necessarily interested in this guitar, but I'm interested in seeing in person the new Steve Vai gems that have the yin yang handles and stuff. They look so weirdly crazy that I kind of want to see them. I'm very excited to see hear the new Paul Gilbert JHS pedal. If you haven't seen that, they announced that they're doing a Paul Gilbert JHS pedal. I'm a fan of Paul Gilbert and the JHS pedal. I think it's going to sound great. You know, my Angry Charlie is one of my favorite boss pedals. And so that's cool about that. I'm very excited because it's not guaranteed. Nothing is guaranteed, especially in a fluid arrangement like NAMM, but I'm set up and I have an appointment to do a quick video with Steve Vai. And I'm excited about that. I think that's going to be a cool little video. It's going to be 5-10 minutes, and it's specifically about a couple of things that I'm interested in. And that was set up for me as a thing. Again, I say everything's fluid. Obviously, things can change and it cannot happen. But it is I am scheduled for the appointment and have that stuff done. And so I'm excited about that. I did a guitar. I did I'm really curious about the new Warwick Fan Fret bass, rock bass, affordable Fan Fret rock bass. Very curious about that bass. And what else? I think that covers it for the NAMM. There's other stuff too, but that's the most stuff that's sticking in my head most. All right. Okay. And then let me hit a couple super chats real quick because they've been sitting over here patiently. Thank you guys for doing that and then waiting. Let me reload it because now my screen's got something went wrong. Okay, here we got Grumpy Mike. Says, for no particular reason, happy Friday. Thank you, Grumpy Mike. That was really nice of you, man. I appreciate it. Proving, once again, Mike's not so grumpy. John Gonzalez says, Neil Peart, rest in peace. Yep, John, we talked about that at the beginning of the episode. And again, we'll talk about it again real quick. As you guys, if you haven't heard, Neil Peart has passed away. I believe he was age of 67 years old. And he passed away after battling brain cancer for 3 years. And it's horrible to hear this stuff, and especially somebody so talented and 67 is not old. It's just not, you know, I mean, I know because of the demographic, there's a lot of 20-year-olds that watch this channel. In fact, the majority of my viewership is 25 to 35. That's the biggest section of my viewership. And then 35 to 45 second. 25 to 35, you're going to think that 67 seems old. And then it's weird how life gives you perspective. I'm not saying as you get older, all of a sudden old doesn't seem old. You just realize 67 is just not that old. It just used to be old and it's just not anymore. It's weird. So, you know, especially when you think about this, I always laugh when I think about the fact that Sammy Hagar joined Van Halen at 45. You know what I mean? It just doesn't see. It's just kind of funny when you think of it that way. So, Donovan Peacock says, "Hello, Philip. I have an 18-year-old son. He's wanting to learn to play the acoustic guitar with a budget of $300. What do you suggest?" I hate answering this. I've said this before. So once I said this about Lawrence, I said, "I hate saying," and they said, "Why do you hate saying?" I hate saying something that I know I've already promoted on the channel because it just seems like a cop out. But for $300, I don't think you can beat the Orangewood Acoustics right now. A lot of good guitar for the buck. I mean, let me get this straight. Let me be very clear. I think for $300, you can buy a lot of great acoustics. You can go to any kind of major music store or mom and pop music store and find a great acoustic. You can. I like Washburn's at $300. I think the Fender CD60s, at $300, you can get a Fender 60 CD, electronic acoustic Fender with a hard shell case for $300. You can even get a solid top Fender acoustic with hard shell case for under $300, CD60, solid top. Very good guitars. I recommend them. But for some reason, when I look back at the guitars that I've played and checked out, the Orangewood guys really are trying really hard to build market. The guitars seem really good. I would definitely look at them as well. Make sure, though, if you do Orangewood, they always have coupon codes. You know, they always give them to me when I do a video. Any channels that do them to do videos, they did some coupon codes. So make sure you use those coupon codes, like 10% off, 15% off. They come with gig bags. Very good stuff. Just something to recommend. Resale value, the Fender will hold more resale value than the Orangewoods or the off-brand acoustics, but I really like them. I did a review of the Harley Benton. That was a great acoustic as well. And to be honest, for those kind of prices, you can't beat that stuff. And think of this, you can buy a great acoustic for under $200, much less three. So Donovan, I would check those out. I really will say this. When it comes to a lot of the product I review, I really do stay away from stuff I really don't like. So what's great is even in a review where I seem tepid, you know, it's like warm and I'm not loving the product, please understand that one of the biggest problems I have that I just don't know how to get around is that I do content and then I won't release it. And that's why all of a sudden you guys see like video, video, video. And then I'm dormant. I'm gone for a week. And then video, 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 right? I trust me, I'm making videos all the time. Just sometimes I review it and I get to the end and I go, I don't really love it. It's just true. It's just, I don't. So, I try to stick with stuff I can enjoy, or at least I think sometimes that everybody's looking for some kind of information on. But that being said, I like that. I just think Orangewood is a good choice to think about. Yamaha as well too is another brand. See, this is where it gets crazy. I got to pick one because otherwise everybody's got a good guitar out there. But, I'm going to recommend the Orangewood first, then the Fender. I'll do it in order. Orangewood, then the Fender. Then after Fender, I would go Washburn because I like the Washburn stuff. After Washburn, I do the Harley Benton. And after the Harley Benton, I would do Yamaha. Now, what's funny is Yamaha I pick last just because I know for $300, you're going to get the least amount of guitar for the money. But I think Yamaha makes some of the best acoustic guitars for the money just in that price point. I think those guys will throw a little bit more at you for the money. Music Therapy says, "Phil, I really hope I can still make it to NAMM this year. Find you, buy you a beer." Oh no, don't, let's not turn the channel into where people find me. They buy me alcohol. Here's the problem with that. So you guys know, I need to warn you right now. A lot of people say that lately. Here's something you'll find out. And some of my patrons have already found this out, when hanging out with me, 2.5 beers. Dude, I'm tossed. I'm drunk. I say tossed when I mean drunk. I'm drunk. I'm tipsy. So I will drink, but you got to understand, it's like, I like it. I just, seriously. So yeah, no one try to buy, don't ever walk up and hand me beers or anything. I won't drink it. I'll hold it because in a lot of situations, if I have to talk, I know I just kind of lose, you know, I get a little inebriated. It happens. But thank you. You know what? Thank you so much. Let's see. And personally, thank you. But just in case it doesn't happen, you might get a beer at your name. So he gave me a super chat for that. Music Therapy, I would love it if I saw you at the show. That would be great. I'm going to make an announcement before this weekend, before the weekend's up. I will make an announcement of how some places I plan to be, where if you want to meet up and we want to say hi to each other, we can say hi. Okay. Of course, if you see me anywhere, please say hi, come up. I don't even care if I look busy. Okay. Here's what I will tell you guys, always with respect, when I not only respect for you, but respect for me and whoever I'm talking to. Understand that no one pays me, so I'm not at work. Okay. When I'm running around the NAMM show, don't feel like, oh, you're talking to a company and that's your bread and buddy. No, trust me. I'm on my own dime for everything. So please feel free to come up to me. I support myself with you guys. It works backwards. Companies care about me because they care about you. That's it. There's if a company sends me a guitar, they're sending me a guitar, not because they care about me. They care about 250,000 subscribers. That's what they care about. Without you, there is no me. It's just the math of it, okay? One day, less people will watch this channel, and then companies will care less than they care now. That is the fact. There's nothing wrong with that. It's just the fact of it. So the point is this. I will always lean into you guys more than anyone else, because without you, it literally dies, right? There's just no way. I love it when somebody says, well, why does anyone care what you think? I'm like, I don't know, but I know this. They don't care what I think. They care who watches. And that's you guys. Companies care about you. And so what I'm saying that is, if you see me at the show, the only reason is this has come up recently where somebody's messaged me after an event and said, I saw you, but you look busy and I didn't want to come up to you. Please come up to me. I don't care. I don't care who I'm talking to. If I'm talking to the owner, I don't care. The president of NAMM, just interrupt us and say hi. Just do it politely, of course, you know, right? Don't walk up and be a jerk, but, you know, walk up and just say, hey, I want to say hi, and say hi. Plus, not to mention, you make me look good, right? You know how many times, and this is a long episode today, but you know what? Maybe it's a pre-NAMM show and it needs to be. You know how many times you guys have really, really come through for me? You know what it's like? It's happened twice now, two times, where I'm talking to a company. I'm trying to explain what I do. Like, oh, I do YouTube. Oh, you do? And I'm like, yeah, it's a pretty good sized channel, right? She can't walk up like a jerk, be like, I have subscribers, work with me, right? I'm trying to sell the idea. And then somebody walks up and goes, hey, I just want to let you know I'm a huge, huge fan of your channel. And I'm like, yeah, what that guy said. This is true. I'm not making that up. And then the company's like, who is this guy that I'm talking to? Like, a second ago, I was just this guy bugging them. And now suddenly, like, well, how come I don't know this guy? And how come that guy knew this guy? So what I'm saying is, you guys, please feel free to come up to me at the NAMM show at all. Do that. You know, just grab me. Just say hi, please. That's what we're doing. I'm at the NAMM show. I'm working, but technically I'm always kind of working, you know, but I work doing what I love. So it's kind of a, you know, work. I take the fun where I can. I take the work where I can. That's basically a long way to say, come up and say hi. Reggie Wooten says, for the NAMM coffee fund, that I will be drinking. Oh my goodness. I will be drinking so much coffee at the NAMM show because I have some crazy early mornings and I'm sure that it's going to be late nights. Reggie, you are awesome as always. Thank you. By the way, I'm very excited about your Harley Benton, the green guitar, and seeing what you got to say about that. I didn't get a chance to respond to your email, but I read it. And I figured we'd be talking soon because I usually stay pretty communicative with you on your emails. Thank you, Reggie. Tom says, Gibson here. Gibson hire Gil Yeron, Tom Barlett, and Roman Wrist and get it right. Oh, okay. Yeah, yeah. So what Tom is saying, okay, so Tom Barlett, Roman Wrist is the guy who makes he makes the, there's a, the guy who makes Max, Roman Wrist is the guy who made the famous Slash guitar that isn't a Gibson. And Tom Barlett, if I recall, now remember, I'm not huge into these guys. Tom Barlett, that's the guy, I remember, like, a lot of times when I see an expensive Les Paul, there's a certificate with it, and I think it's Tom Barlett, right? So basically what Tom's saying is that they should hire those guys and get the company right. I think that's a smart idea. And what I mean by that is, I think image-wise, hiring in some of these people. Do you guys hear the news that James Brown, the guy who co-designed the 5150 with Hartley Peavy, the guy who made the Peavy Classic line, is now working for EVH as an amp designer. that's really impressive because, again, it's like it makes you think, like, what's going to happen next, right? That's what I thought. Like EVH, and now with one of the original creators of the amp and the platform, this will be exciting. So to Tom's credit, I agree what he's saying is that, you know, you get Gil, Tom, and Roman, and you get them involved with Gibson, you're going to get some excitement. They, of course, I think he's like saying they'll get it right as well. And I would love to see that. You know what I mean? I'd love to continue to see Gibson improve and of course, do stuff like that. So, and then Raymond did a super chat and he says, you cover the Neural DSP floor unit? Question mark. I haven't, but I will make sure I link it. And I think the Neural DSP unit floor unit, I think they reached out to me. I think it's somebody I'm doing off memory. So Raymond, I think it's something that can happen. I haven't talked about it, but I think it's something we can happen. I got some more super chats and I know we're getting long in the tooth, but I want to hit some of the non super chats because there's 760 of us hanging out and a lot of you guys are just hanging. So, so let me find some guys, or gals, sorry, put a, by the way, I'm just going to do this because why not? Self-promotion. Dave Muniz says, thumbs up, everybody. Give the thumbs up for the channel while I take a drink of water. And Gustav wants to know if we can get 150 likes on the 700. Oh, we got 215 now, so we must be doing good. So 200 likes. See? Good. You guys are great. Thank you, Ryan. Thank you. Gustav, thank you guys for, you know, reminding everybody to do that. You guys are, you guys are great. Thanks. I appreciate that. It's nice to have that kind of support. Hold on. Now Ryan wants to know if we get 250 likes. That's good. While you guys can contemplate if you want to do that while I look for question marks first for a question mark. This is Stefan says, how to try a Kiesel. I want to put my hands on one so bad. I know, man, you know, Stefan, here's what I can tell you. Only what I can tell you, obviously you can go to San Diego. They have a shop. You can put your hands on them. If you're at the NAMM show, they'll have a booth. You can put your hands on them. What I ended up doing, and it was because of you guys just constantly going Kiesel. I found a good deal online. Okay. So here's a way in 2020 to try a guitar is, and again, I'm not saying it's easy because it's a money thing. You can buy a guitar and then you try it and sell it. Now, here's what I mean by that. So here's what you guys think. Hold on. So as you guys know, I did a review of this Kiesel Vader, which I love and I'm keeping. And I bought this guitar for $1,000 with case or gig bag, shipped, delivered $1,000 even. That's it. So, as you guys, anybody who's a Kiesel fan knows, this guitar is worth $1,000, right? You're right. And that's not like the, oh my goodness, smoking deal. I've seen them. So, you know, $600-$700. I've seen crazy deals on them. So, but basically long story short, what I was going to say was I bought it because I felt safe. I feel like, okay, $1,000 for that Kiesel. I felt like if I get it and I don't love it, now I've tried the Kiesel, I can move it for $1,000. And I'm pretty sure I can. I'm sure a few of you right now would be like, you give me $1,000 for that guitar and I can move it sideways, but I don't plan to. But the point is, I hate to say it, that's kind of, Stefan, how a lot of us are getting hold of guitars. The other thing you do is network with friends. Sometimes it's nice to have a, you know, find out, you may have a friend of a friend that has one and try them that way. I understand it's tough. It's hard to put your hands on them. They do have a great, not great. They do have a return policy. I don't want to say great. Some people told me it's bad. Some people told me it's good. I don't know. I bought mine used. I want to buy a second Kiesel though. That's what I'm up to now. So, let's do another non super chat and then I'll go to a super chat. Here's a question. Maybe. Huh. All right. Maurice says, nerdiest guitar head I know. Wow. That's a impossible question. And I say that because there's smarter people than me, obviously. When I think of like people like Lawrence, he's a much smarter person than me in almost a lot of ways, every way, especially when it comes to not only just pedals, but how gear works, you know, his knowledge of it. He's definitely smarter than me. My buddy Joe is amazing guitar player, is far superior player than me. And I say that because I think those are, you know, so I surround myself with a lot of people who are better than me in a lot of things. And I think that is unintentional, although I've read now through success books over the years that that's what I'm supposed to do. It never occurred to me to surround myself. You know, I was doing that on purpose. I was surrounding myself with people who are smarter than me, better than me. It definitely ups my game. In my arena of my friends and the people I know, I am definitely one of the nerdiest. And I can't think of a single person. And right now I can think of some people who are close. My buddy Thor is close. We're definitely on par for the nerdiest scale of loving guitars, loving pedals. And I don't mean like I know more about gear than he does. I'm just saying nerdiest. Nerdiest to me is someone who geeks out, who's habitually out of control with the idea. I literally don't stop doing this. And I say that with not a bragging thing. Sometimes I wish I'd chill out. You know what I mean? I'm like, my whole time revolves around this. I like talking about it. If I'm not talking about music, I'm talking about gear. If I'm not talking about gear, I'm talking about this industry. If I'm not talking about this industry, I'm talking about the finances in this industry. It's like, it's just always something about the guitar. So, to answer your question, I don't know who the nerdiest guitar head I know, I think is me and the next runner up, probably my buddy Thor, because he's really, really crazy into it too. Plus, he's a better player than me too. So, by far. Okay, so let's do a couple super chats. We're definitely going long today, guys. Maybe that's good or bad. And here we go. The Smelly Cats Jazz says, a used Taylor Big Baby is a killer value for $330. I agree. I'm a Taylor guy. Okay. Smelly Cat Jazz. This is a great conversation. I'm a Taylor guy. I should point that out. I have a Taylor 214. I have a 7 series. I have a bunch of Taylors. I play Taylors. I love Taylors. Taylors are a tricky thing for me to recommend because Taylors are very good, but take more maintenance than the average player is willing to do. That Big Baby Taylor, which is a little different than some of their other Taylor guitars. Basically what I'm trying to say is I agree with you, but also I'm cautionary because I think a Taylor is for an acoustic player who understands that it's going to take a little love because they are thinner tops and they crack. You know, and it's also where you live, where I live, Taylors need to be humidified. You know, there you go. So a great suggestion, Smelly Cat, but I just wanted to give the caveat of why I didn't suggest it, even though I'm a Taylor freak. I like Taylors. I'm looking at my Taylor right now. Okay. So, what else we got? Matt Wells says, hey Phil, what's your thoughts on the price point and law of diminishing return kicks on amps and more money no longer means better quality. Okay. So again, a little bit, I'm going to try to decode this a little bit, Matt, because I think I know what you're saying. I just want to make sure. What's my thoughts on the price point and the laws of diminishing returns? Okay. So let's hit that first. I know that's one long question. I want to hit that first. So on price point and the law of diminishing returns, what he's speaking about, or what I interpret he's speaking about, is what something we all know that, you know, if you buy a $200 guitar, you get a good guitar. If you buy a $500 guitar, you get a better guitar. Buy a $1,000 guitar, you get a better guitar. And at some point, you start not getting a better guitar. You spend another $500. So like every $500 gets better. And then at some point, diminishing returns is says that you basically, the next $500, you only got like $20 worth of product value. And the next $500, you barely got $10 worth of value. So what's my thought on that? I believe in it. I believe in it, not only in a lot of things, but I definitely believe it in the guitar industry as a whole. Private stock guitars from PRS. I have never played a private stock guitar in my entire life that played better or was better than a Core guitar. Now, right now, some guys owning private stock guitars get a little testy with that. I have friends that have private stock guitars. And when I've said that, I felt the sting of what I'm saying. You understand? That's what I'm saying. I understand when you have somebody that you like says something that's against what you do, it doesn't feel good. But what I'm trying to say is that I'm not saying a private stock is not a cool guitar. What I'm saying is that's, to me, the law of diminished returns. If you have the money to buy a private stock guitar and enjoy it, please enjoy it. You probably worked hard and good for you. You know what I mean? Like I said, when I see a guy in a Lamborghini, I'm go, oh, I hate this guy. I go, good for him. You know what I mean? You know, it's hard enough for us to all figure out how to get some kind of success. Somebody who's more successful, I always say good for them. Right. But anyways, my point is, so if somebody has a private stock guitar, I think there's a lot of great reasons to own a private stock guitar. There's obviously the excitement of owning something that no one can own. Right. I mean, that's got to feel good. I don't know. I've never walked into a room and there was like, oh, McKnight, he's got the car. You know, right? The watch. You know, I don't have that stuff. I would imagine that's what a private stock feels like. Hey, it's like a Rolex watch. You know what I mean? Four guys walk in a room, the guy with the Rolex watch, you're probably going, okay, that guy's probably successful. So I think that's what the persona of a private stock would do, is give you the same persona as a Rolex watch. I don't know. But my point is that I think if you ask me, though, why is there a reason to own a private stock? I can give you 10 reasons. If you ask me if one of those reasons is because it's going to play better than a Core, I don't think it's going to play much better. I think by the time you get to a $3,000 guitar, I think they've ironed out all the things they can iron out to make the guitar play well. I don't think there's a whole lot more they can do. And again, I'm not saying nothing. I'm just saying a whole lot. I hope that all makes sense. To the second part of your question, it says, yeah, and he just reaffirmed it. He said the more money no longer means better quality. That's the problem with the money thing is that the part of the reason that money used to mean better quality back in the day was they built better product, but now we know the machine that builds a $3,000 guitar, that same machine can build a $200 guitar and vice versa. So there's a little bit to that. I still believe a high-end guitar still has a lot of things to like about them. But again, I'm not so conceited that I believe that a cheap guitar can't play great, because I come across them every day. I own a couple. It's good. So, okay. Let's see. Planet says, anyone standing next to me looks good. Lunch at NAMM on me, up to give bucks. Well, I appreciate that, Planet. Anyone, it's funny. Anyone standing next to me looks good. Yeah, like I said, if you guys see me, say hi. I'm easy to detect. Bald, black shirt, stick figures on it. You'll see me. So like I said, see me, come say hi. Please say come say hi. Please say come, you know, come up and say hi. Like I said, it bums me out when anyone tells me that they didn't come say hi. And they always say the same thing. You look busy or you look tired. I get that too. You look tired. I just look tired. Usually because I'm sleeping in a hotel for 2 hours. I don't sleep well in hotels. I don't enjoy traveling. It's the weirdest job I have now, traveling. So there you go. Sander did a super chat. It says 5. Done. Sean Brown says, any tips on getting first gigs? Man. You know, I can only tell you what I did. I mean, you know, find anyone that will let you play. Your first gig is anywhere. You know, I think first gig, I remember just anyone. I think my first gig was a party. I think because you could always find a friend who have a party. Like, can my band play? You know what I mean? And we played. And then the second place I ever played was, I think, a church. I don't mean at a church or for a church function. I think it was like the church let us use, not my church, just a church, let a bunch of kids use the thing, and we played. And then we played a bar on like the worst night with 3 people, and they didn't pay us. And then I think we paid one night to play at a bar. So, you know, when it comes to gigs, here's what I will tell you. Don't don't, here's the advice I'm giving you first gig. Try to find anyone to let you play, but don't believe anyone. Right. What I mean by that is, a lot of times you'll reach out to a couple people for a gig and somebody will give you a loose answer and then you'll stop working the other sources because you're like, oh, we got a gig on the 30th. You need to make sure you're firm on what you got going on. That was another thing that's really disappointing about gigs is some people will just be very passive, like, oh, sure, you know, show up. But you want to make sure it's like, yes, 7 o'clock you're playing. So, there you go. Oh, you know what? Another good suggestion. Steve Long said jam nights. That's a great thing. You know, I do a lot of jam nights, me and my personally, with my friends and stuff. And yeah, a lot of times bands, especially new bands, will say, hey, can we, our whole band, go up and just do a couple songs or a song or two? Sure, absolutely. Like I said, the best advice for your first gig is just understand that it doesn't matter where the first gig is. That's the advice. Don't worry about where it's at. Don't matter who it's in front of. Don't think of it's any kind of measure of who you are as a band or as an artist. Literally, just any gig is a gig. So a coffee shop, you know, the back of your house, that's a gig, right? Just get, you know, just get in front of people and play, and then try set the goal to elevate each gig from the last one. Try to do a little better each time. Lefty Guitarist did a super chat just to say thumbs up for Phil. Thank you guys. I appreciate that, for you doing that. And let's go. And we went really long today. This is the longest show I've done in forever. And there's 760 of you guys still hanging with me. Crazy. Crazy in a good way, by the way. Hold on. And I'm going to do a non-super chat. I'm going to try to do a highlight question. Here we go. Here's last of the non-super chat questions. It says, Martin says, hey, Phil, do you recommend copper foil tape shielding for the pickup cavities on a pickup upgrade on a single coil Strat clone? Yes, I like the copper shielding tape. I recommend it as well. Although I have copper shielding tape only because sometimes, for whatever particular reason, when a person wants their cavity shielded, they'll... Sometimes the people are very specific, like, Phil, can you copper shield my cap? You know, they want the shielding tape, copper shielding tape. That being said, I don't use copper shielding tape unless somebody asks me. That's the only reason I have it. What I use, and I use the StuMac one just because I bought it online with StuMac, I don't know, a couple years ago, and I'm still using it. I buy the magnetic shielding paint. I like it. I use a little brush. I brush it all in there. It's great. It's easy. It's fast. I feel like I can get all the nooks and crannies. I like it a lot. And so that's what I use. Since doing the channel, I've seen a lot of people say you can get some on Amazon and other cheaper sources. That's great. The StuMac, I don't believe is a branded product to them to be exclusive. I think they just sell it. That's where I got it. So that's why I recommend it there, because that's where I got it. It's not cheap, but so you know, it is cheap because the can just lasts forever. In fact, at some point it's got to go bad, but it hasn't gone bad yet. It's still, when you stir it, it's still doing what it's doing. But that's what I use. I like the magnetic shielding paint is what I like. But either way, I would do both. I got some questions once on a Sharp My Axe, where I did a guitar and I didn't shield it, and they asked me why I particularly didn't shield it. Well, sometimes because it's already shielded and I didn't add shielding, but also I don't tend to shield humbuckers. I tend to always shield single coils. There's definitely nothing wrong with shielding humbuckers, but sometimes if a guitar is not making any noise, it's not having any complaints by anybody, and there's humbuckers and all this stuff, I don't really go out of my way to shield it. But I always shield the single coils for sure, because it helps. All shielding will do is help. It'll all help. So there you go. Try that. And then let's do the last, I think it's the last super chat that just came in. And nope, there's a couple. Okay. Matt Will says, he's clarifying his question. He says, my question was specific to amps. What price does it kick in for amplifiers, in your opinion? He's talking about the law of diminishing returns. The thing that kills it for me is, amplifiers are a strange thing in the idea that the quality of them somehow is connected to the quality of how they're built. It's not connected to how good they sound. That has not been my experience. what I find is this. Sometimes I have plugged into an amp that on paper is the greatest amp ever. It is hand wired. It is based on this circuit. It is made by this amazing person who does amazing things. It is, you know, it was blessed by 20 virgins and the amp is the greatest thing ever. And I plug in and I go, this sounds like a fart. And I go, huh, this is weird. Why is it not good? It's supposed to be good. And this is what I kind of learned. Because it's not good, right? Because just because something's hand-wired or built well or expensive doesn't mean it's good. And I think that's the snobbery that happens with us. We all are guilty of it. That's what happens with solid-state amps and digital amps and tube amps. You know, somebody will say, oh, I'll never play a solid-state amp. And I go, well, I'll never play a bad one. If they make a good one, I like it. Somebody will say, I don't play junky, you know, PC board tube amps. I'm like, right. But if they're good, they're good. I've experienced this in all levels. Some amps are good. For some reason, think of it this way. Sometimes an amp isn't actually that great sounding, but for some reason you just connect with it and it's good. So to answer your question on that, is sometimes I don't, with especially with technology and amps and pedals are just as bad. This idea that, you know, if you don't make it out of the best stuff, you don't have good stuff. That's not entirely true. If you really read a lot of the books, we were talking about that earlier about history of stuff. If you read a lot of the books on the amp building history, which there's a lot of them out there by Marshall and Fender and just many companies. Most of those guys were chasing affordable product. They were just trying to build affordable product. And now we revere that stuff is so great. And it was actually the cheapest at the time. So I think, and in the answer specifically question, you're like, you want to know what price point do I think that it does? I don't know. And what I mean by that is there's only my comfort zone. I'm not going to pay over $2,000 for an amplifier. That's crazy for me. And the reason is this, that not because $2,000 is expensive and not because $2,000 is not expensive. It's because what I like that Dirty Shirley was $1,500 street, $1,500. I'm happy. So as I go above $1,500, it's got to be a lot better for me to justify the pricing. And that's what I'm getting at a lot of times with amps. In fact, if you look at my amps in my personal collection, you'll see they float around a certain price point. And that doesn't mean they're the best ones. It just means that I'm happy with those amps. So I don't really see the justification of higher. So although it's nice to say like amps over $3,000 are a joke or they're not worth it, that was something I would never say, because what I found is when you find an amp, if you find a $400 amp and it, I mean new, not used, I mean $400 new amp and it's fantastic and you love it, well then I think that if you look at $800 amp, it better be twice as good. I think that's a logical decision to make. So BCRich 581, you know what? Great comment. I knew it. His comment was, I only play Dumbles and Train Wrecks. Right. Those are the I played a Dumble for the first time last year. I don't know if I guys got to share this with you. I played a Dumble for the first time ever. And I was so relieved when I plugged into it and I went, eh. it's good, I guess. But I wasn't like, what, this is what I've been missing my whole life. Like if I don't have this, and I'm sure there's a ton of reasons why somebody loves it. And I believe them, but I was happy when I was like, you know what I mean? It was a relief because the biggest fear I had was, I hope goodness, what am I going to do if I love this thing? I'm going to have to sell everything I own to get this amp or chase this unicorn forever. So it's funny. Nissan 570 says, I got a Supersonic 22 floor model for $600. Love it. Always hunting for deals. Yeah, I love the Supersonic. I like the Hot Rod Deluxe. It's like I said, Hot Rod Deluxe, they're good amps. So again, it's a comfort zone. Everything with price is always going to be a comfort zone. But I know deep down Matt's really trying to get at the core of it, which is where does the sham come? What are you, when you pay a certain price for an amp, where are you not getting quality? And, you know, it's really as simple as if it's a manufactured amp, it shouldn't be super expensive in the first place. But if there is hand wiring, if there's hand work in there, it's not like it's just because time, it takes a lot of time, right? If the thing takes a lot of time to make, it's unfortunately going to be expensive, whether it sounds better or not. So I hope that helps. Like I said, I was not trying to be vague, but again, like I said, I really believe a lot of price point has to do with your internals and not necessarily what things really cost. It's what people find they enjoy in and find they like. Lame Noodles Great sign on, by the way. Lame Noodle says, what do you think about crank amps? Tony Crank, which is Tony Dow. I've known Tony. He used to repair amps at my shop. Crank amps. I liked the Crankenstein and the Rev Junior, the Junior amps. I'm not going to say I regret getting rid of them. I had them and I got rid of them. I do kind of regret getting rid of my Crankenstein and my Rev Junior. I had the 1980 as well. I think some of you guys remember the old channel, or not the old channel, but early on the channel, I think I had them in the couple of videos. You know, crank amps were good amps. They were definitely a great product. And I think he's still making crank now. I don't know. I haven't talked to Tony in over a year and a half. But my thoughts about them were they're good. Again, I know Tony, so I'm a little biased. I think he's a smart guy and I think he makes a good amp. And Crank had some mishaps in their company because there was a lot of people, partners and stuff, and it all went to crap. But it was definitely not from Tony's side. And in the idea that his amps were bad, his amps were definitely always good. If you're into that sound, they did it. They did it and they did it well. And then Sanders said, have a copy on me. Thank you, man. I appreciate that so, so very much. This was probably the longest one. We did 2 hours today. This is why I kept drinking water. I'm going to lose my voice. Somebody wants to know, is crank another word for, you know, the drug? Yeah, but that's not what they, but they sell it with a K. So therefore it's okay. let's see. Okay. I think we did it. So that was a lot of questions today. We did a lot of stuff, covered a lot of stuff, but the NAMM show is coming up. There won't be a live show next Friday because I'll be at NAMM. I don't know how I would pull it off if I'm able to pull off any kind of thing like that. What I will tell you, though, is what I hope to do is what I did last year at NAMM. If you noticed, I did the live show immediately. I'll do a post-NAMM live show after NAMM, so you don't have to wait till next Friday, next week. There won't be this one Friday, but there'll probably be one like Monday. Okay. So that's the plan. I'll put a message out if there's anything that's not going to happen. So we'll do that. And, there was quite a few of us, over 800 of us today at one point, I think, on the live show. Thank you guys so much for hanging out with us. Thank you for so many great questions and stuff today. It's really great. I was supposed to do a Tessie switch giveaway. I have some Tessie knobs to give away and we didn't get to it. So I will do it at the post NAMM show. I'm sorry about that. But like I said, there was a lot of you guys and you had a lot of questions, a lot of super chats too, by the way, which thank you very much. That's really appreciative. But again, a lot of questions, a lot of stuff. And good news. And so, you know, is that you should see a lot of NAMM content coming right away. I don't plan to hold my NAMM content back. So whatever content I do, whatever content I do, I don't plan to release it weeks after the event. I plan to, when NAMM's over, all of my NAMM content should be out. So whatever I do at NAMM, it'll be happen fast and furious and you'll get it as fast as possible. And, I hope you guys have a great week next week and, keep in touch. You can check out Instagram. I'll be posting stuff on Instagram and Facebook all the time about the NAMM show. Again, it's trying to put out as much NAMM stuff as possible. And on that note, as always, guys, I want to thank you so much for hanging out with me. And until next week, well, actually the week after next, which will be the Monday, know your gear.